this is Monocle Reads. I'm Georgina Godwin, and my guest today is Jennifer Otter Bickerdike, a rock and roll cultural historian and author. She's been at the centre of the music industry for the past three decades, although she doesn't look nearly old enough. Her new book, Being Britney, Pieces of a Modern Icon, is part biography, part social history, chronicling the life of the pop legend Britney Spears. Jennifer, welcome.
First of all, girl, can I just make out with you after this? Because saying I look that good, hey!
Well, the first thing I really need to know, though, is about your name, Bickerdike. That's...
You got it in one try. That is very impressive. Okay, so let's talk about this last name. So my maiden name is Otter, and I went to Olympic trials for swimming. And obviously, the listeners can't see, I'm 6 feet tall. So I was quite a scary presence in the swimming arena because I'd get up there, I'm this huge beast at 6 feet tall. And then people thought it was a stage name because they call out at swim meets. They'd be like, in lane four, it's like a boxing match, you know, in lane three, Smith, in lane two, you know, whoever, lane four, Otter. And they're like, I would jump up and down and make a big like, So I grew up having a last name that really, really kind of was perfect for what I was doing. But when I met my husband and we decided to get married, I called my grandma and I'm like, yeah, you know, James and I are getting married. And she was, bless her, she was in a nursing home and she had a little bit of dementia. She was actually a poet laureate, so she was an author as well. But I remember her going, what's James's last name again? And I'm like, it's Bickerdike. And she's like, what? And I'm like, Bickerdike. And she's like, what? And I said it a third time and she cackled. Georgina, the woman cackled down the phone for about 20 minutes. She's like, you are not taking that name. And I'm like, oh, yes, I am. So, yeah. So it's even my grandma thinks it's funny, but.
Well, it's certainly unusual.
Is it?
Absolutely.
I've had people on Twitter add me just for the last name. So, you know, there you go. If they buy a book, even better. Hey.
But actually, to give you your full title, you are, in fact, a professor, a rock and roll cultural historian and author. You work across music heritage, fandom, broadcast and academia. And you've done extraordinary things. I mean, you've been at various record companies, you've toured with and devised marketing and branding campaigns for people like Nirvana, Pearl Jam, Rage Against the Machine, Dr. Dre, Gwen Stefani. I mean, huge, huge names. And what I'm really interested in is to get to actually what the nub of what you do for those people is. When you're with them, what is your role?
That was a lot of work I did back when I was younger. So I was working for a big record company and I was doing marketing plans for them. So a big part of what I did was creating the desire to buy their records, creating their brand and their image at different parts in their career. So Dr. Dre is a really interesting one because when he's coming out as a solo artist, he had, of course, his first really huge, massive solo hit. But people forget there was an Aftermath record label, which was not that successful. Like there were some bombs on it that did not do very well. So it's how do you take an artist at different points in their career, in the arc, in their longevity, and evolve them and change them, not just them, but the way that the fans perceive them, and have fans continue to literally buy in and invest in that artist. So that is what I was actively doing for a big chunk of my career till I was about 35 years old. Whether that was working at Facebook doing that, or whether it was working at Interscope Records or working directly with artists, just doing consulting with them, working on how do we, as you get older or as what your personal interest as an artist change, how do we get fans to come on that journey with you? So that is really what I did. And I did a lot of touring across the United States with bands too. So when you're living with an artist and you're on the road with them, you really get to see kind of the day in and day out what they are all about. And I think that's really, really important because what you see in front of the camera or when they're on stage is just a very small part of the real human aspect of the person, the humanity. And that's why when I wrote Being Britney, I really wanted to show the 360 and how important Britney is as a person. And I learned a lot about that from my years just dealing with a lot of these iconic people, seeing them as people, but also understanding them as something bigger than themselves, if that makes any sense.
I mean, you've written so many interesting things and indeed inspired a book yourself, It Ain't Over Till It's Over, about you kind of giving up everything and moving to London. But you've written about Nico, you've written about the Velvet Underground, you've written about why vinyl matters, you've written about Kurt Cobain and fandom and all the rest of it. And unfortunately, we don't have time to go into all of that, but let's do a deep dive then into Britney, because, of course, she is, as you say, a cultural icon, but also much in the news at the moment about this whole control of her by her father, about this conservatorship. And I'm interested in knowing how she ended up at that point. Tell us Britney's story.
I mean, just can I just go back one quick moment about the fandom thing that you mentioned a second ago? And that is, I think one thing that makes me quite different than a lot of authors out there is two things. One is that I worked in the record label. So I helped create the fandom from a lot of artists from the very beginning of their careers, but also artists like, sorry, this is not directly relating to Britney, but it's kind of, this is the lens I'm using when when I'm coming to someone like Britney, or even someone like Nico, for example, who my last book was about. You know, I've worked with artists from the very beginning of their career, or someone like Sting, who I worked with him on one of his later solo records. So you're really having to look at where that person is at that moment when you come to them. And that's something that I think is different than a lot of other writers. I don't know that many people that worked in the music industry. I started working in the music industry when I was 16 years old. And then I also worked in Silicon Valley, working in the early days when we were starting to get bands and artists involved with different internet companies. So I kind of have those two skills. But then the other thing, Georgina, is that music has been the savior of my life. Like you mentioned, It's Not Over Till It's Over, the Marlo Thomas book that I'm in. The reason I moved to England is because one of my best friends was murdered not far from my house in San Francisco. It was one of my childhood friends. And it was listening to the music of Joy Division, listening to the Smiths. I mean, I was raised in the Catholic Church, and all the praying and all the asking for help from God did not help me. It was listening to Ian Curtis. It was listening to Morrissey and Marr that got me through that time period. So I kind of have, I know it's three things I said too, but it's my professional experience, but then my also profound, almost religious, I would say, belief in how music can change and heal and guide you that I bring to when I'm writing and researching things. So when it comes to Britney, I mean, it's interesting because Britney was coming up in the music business at the same time I was already in the music business. And one thing that's been fascinating for me and difficult when I've been writing Being Britney is looking at how I felt about Britney, if that makes any sense, during that time period, because she's a decade younger than I was. And obviously, Britney came into the music industry as a child star. We first kind of come to notice her in a reality show called Star Search, which is, it's like American Idol. What you guys have, what's it called here?
The Pop Idol.
Yeah, like Pop Idol, exactly. So she comes in as a child star, and all you start thinking about all the baggage that comes with that. You know what I mean? Like we could have a whole show on just that alone, child stars. So, you know, by the time she's 18, 19 years old, she's already a global megastar. And I was just actually listening to a video some friend had sent over about how in like 18, 19 years old, there's this whole MTV special about that kind of noughties period. I hate that word, but that early 2000s period where all this hate is being aimed at Britney about being overly sexualized and how, you know, she's like half naked and all these things. And the same time period, this is when she performs at the VMAs and she does, I think it's I Can't Get No Satisfaction, and she strips down to like this kind of sparkly, almost like nude bikini and pant and like trousers. And at that same year, she's getting so much hate for it, Georgina, but there's three male artists that same exact time period that are doing songs all about butt. Like there's Thong Song, there's like Shake That Thing by Mystical, and there's a third one, I can't remember what it was. But we're not looking at that. We're looking, all this vitriol is going towards Britney. And that's the thing that, like, when you're saying, like, do a deep dive into Britney's career, why is this young woman, why is she the target of all this? That's, to me, like, what's shocking about it. And that me, as a woman, as someone that is, I've always been, like, I'm a feminist. At that time period, I wasn't, like, shaking my fist and being like, this is wrong. I'm just like, oh, yeah, this is the way it is. And I think a lot of women were like that. Mm.
But for a woman like Britney, who has been so exploited by her management team, by her father, how do you balance the ethical question of being yet another person speaking on behalf of Britney?
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say I'm speaking on behalf of Britney at all. I would not say that. I'd say that what the book tries to do and what was important about it was to show how Britney is both a cultural touchstone for so many things, because she's someone that you can, she's someone that we all feel like we know, if that makes any sense. Like, we're all familiar with Britney. So it's a way in to look at different issues, whether it is the media's misogyny, whether it is the women's right to choose what they do with their body, whether it is the system that we have with Hollywood. So she is a way in, but it's also, it's important, the human part to the story, and to look at Britney as a human being, and that part of it's important. I would never say I'm speaking on behalf of Britney. It's not a biography in that sort of way. I think it's more a using her story as a way to look at how we mediatize people, how we use people, how we spit out people, and also the way that we the star system and the celebrity system. I think that's something that's gotten worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. You know, the way that, like, Afghanistan, like, when was that? Like, 2 months ago now? Like, that was a huge thing. Where's that story gone?
Yeah. Yeah. And that actually feeds into the whole question of Britney being controlled by the men in her life.
Yeah.
Because it's not just Britney. Look around us.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, right on my train ride in to see you this morning, somebody had sent me a video, and it was from probably 2001-ish, and it was an MTV special all about pop stars and sexuality, and it was centered around Britney. And what I found so disturbing about it, it's a male narrator, it's all about Britney being too sexy, and it has women commenting on Britney being too sexy. And I just, why are men the ones that are creating the storyline here? Where are women in this? And I think that is something that I find troubling. The most troubling is that I didn't find it troubling at the time. I think that's the weird part about it. You know, like, I was laughing right along with everybody else, like, when she shaved her head. I was laughing right along with everybody else when Chris Cocker was like, leave Britney alone. And I have really clear memories. In 2007, I was working at Facebook when she did the VMAs, when she just, everybody's like, it was a horrible performance when she first premiered Give Me More. And I remember watching it and going, oh, Britney is as fat as I am. I'm so happy that someone's as fat as I am on TV. Now, mind you, I had not had two children. And looking at it, I'm like, she's not fat. Why was I happy about that? And I just remember going around the office the next morning going, oh, Britney has the same body as me. Sweet. You know what I mean? I'm making a joke out of it. I'm mortified at that. Like, why would I do that? But that was the culture at the time, you know, and I was a participant in it. I'm disgusted with myself.
And how do you think that she captured particularly the 90s?
The 90s are a weird period, Georgina, very strange. I wouldn't say she captured the entire 90s. I would say the late 90s going into the 2000s. Because if we look at the early 90s, the early 90s were a time of Riot Girl. It was a time of Bikini Kill, Kathleen Hanna. You have all these badass women like Alanis Morissette. You have Shirley Manson, who's someone I absolutely worship from Garbage. You have the Lilith Fair in America, which is a female-fronted, you have to be a woman in a band. You have all these really powerful things for girls happening and a lot of visibility that was organic. It wasn't something that was a marketing thing. It wasn't something that was like, let's balance out the visibility and awareness for women. It was real and it was happening. And then it almost, I hate to say, like, I'm not someone that's like, when Kurt Cobain died, everything died, because I think going back and saying that is rewriting what happened. When Kurt Cobain died, Nirvana were not the most popular band. Pearl Jam were a lot more popular than Nirvana at that moment. And that's kind of being, the history has been rewritten to say that Nirvana was. But what Kurt Cobain represented was a moment when, and I say this with quote fingers, alternative culture, aka feminism, gay, people of color. I mean, I'm talking early 90s here. You could be someone with colored hair and you could be someone with a nose piercing and you could be, we had this feeling that we could take over and be the mainstream. And I know it sounds like strange probably to some of your younger listeners because they are doing that. They are in the mainstream. They have a nose ring. They have purple hair. But you and I know that, you know, to get that hair dye in the 90s or the 80s or the 70s, you had to go to the bad part of town. If you had a nose ring, you know, that was, my dad called that, you know, face hardware. You know, you had to take that out.
Yeah.
So to have that, to have that was a statement that you were part of something bigger and different. And when Kurt died, the dream and the idea of people with a different agenda that was not mainstream, that was not, you know, Reaganomics, that died. So you're like, what does this have to do with Britney? What it has to do is there was a void that was open suddenly, and it was filled with a lot of these kind of pre-manufactured or seemingly pre-manufactured pop bands. So you have NSYNC, you have Backstreet Boys, you have the wretched Limp Bizkit. You have all these kind of things coming in to fill this vast rupture that has happened in the pop music world. And I think that that's kind of where Britney comes in. And, you know, things swing one way, they swing back the other way. And that's, I think, what's really fascinating about it. And also something that I think people don't talk about, and I talk about this a lot in the book, is the AIDS epidemic. And in America, at least, we were really being pumped abstinence, not safe sex, but abstinence. And as someone that grew up in the Bay Area, I mean, Georgina, I don't know how it was here in the UK, but I had a cousin that died of AIDS. And so we didn't know what caused AIDS. And I mean, I remember getting library books as a kid and being scared if I touched the library book, I was going to get AIDS. So I would read the library book with plastic bags on my hand, and then I would go wash my hands because I was scared I was going to get AIDS. How this all goes back to Britney is, if you are that terrified of getting a disease, you want to be as safe as possible. And what we were being taught in school, Georgina, was not safe sex, not having a condom, not how to do, give oral sex or do other things besides actual penetrative intercourse, but to have no sex at all. So here comes Britney. She's a, you know, from the South, the Bible Belt, good Christian girl. You know, she looks very sweet. She's the exact opposite of someone like a Courtney Love, someone like a Kathleen Hanna, someone like a Shirley Manson who has dyed hair and wears Doc Martens and is very outspoken. Britney Spears seems safe, and she plays directly into that fear that parents have about sex and their kids getting AIDS. Mm-hmm. And one other, just two other points quickly on this. You also have to remember in America that we had the whole Bill Clinton scandal at that same time. So sex is very much on the agenda in America. And ironically, the Bill Clinton administration is pumping all their money for sex education is being pumped into this abstinence agenda. And that is being really touted as the normative way for kids to have, you know, relationships. So imagine being like 13 and 14 years old, and you're going to school, and this is like, you know, ooh, I want to make out with someone. You're being told that abstinence is the way forward. Britney Spears is the perfect thing for that.
Mm. But then her image changes completely and she becomes highly sexualized.
I would say that it's an interesting one because she has that virgin vixen kind of vibes. You know what I mean? It's like she has, it depends on when you're looking at it too, because obviously after Justin Timberlake, who is just, in my opinion, scum for doing what he did, you know, just disgusting. But if you go back to what we were just saying about that performance when she's in the glittery, almost see-through bikini and the trousers, that was kind of what that whole time period was like. You have this whole like abstinence culture where dads and daughters are going to abstinence balls. So it's almost like you can do everything, but actually put the penis in the vagina. And Britney was kind of all about that, like this titillating, literally, like you're right on the verge. You can do everything but actually have sex. And that's kind of what, that's what that marketing agenda was all about. Like, you can be sexy, you can go right to the very edge, but do not put the penis in, because that was what the whole virginity thing was about. Does that make sense?
Is there any wonder then that she had this huge, very public mental health crisis?
Oh, girl. I mean, number one, if you look at the symptoms, if you want to call that, of the things that happened to Britney, they line up exactly with postpartum depression. But you think of this, the girl could not go anywhere without the world literally having a microscope on her. Everything she did. I mean, this is a kid. I mean, I don't, Georgina, you look like a funky fresh girl. You know what I mean? I'm sure when you were 19, 20, you were out having fun, going crazy, making out with people. You know what I mean? And the thought that this woman is just cannot do anything without all of us judging her, being in a paper, every single thing, like, no wonder. Like, there is no way she could not have had mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And then you put on top of that the pressure of having two young kids, not feeling like you could trust anyone around you. I mean, the isolation, that's one thing, going back to my personal experiences working with people. And even now, I would say, like, it's so hard to trust people when you start getting to any level of fame. You know, do you like me for me, or do you like Britney Spears, or do you like Britney Spears, the girl you know, the girl from the South, the simple person, like, what, you know, who do you like and love? And that's a very difficult thing. Who can you trust?
Yeah, so, absolutely. Let's fast forward to the court case and the whole Free Britney movement and where she is now, because she does seem to have claimed herself back.
Mm. The conservatorship has been an absolute farce from the very, very beginning. It was all about, oh, you know, Britney's been a bad girl and daddy is going to take care of everything. I find it disgusting, unlawful. I could go on and on about it. But the two things I think are so fantastic, one is the Free Britney movement. And that is what I love about it so much. It shows the power that people that really have conviction about something can do. You have folks, these are not, for the most part, you know, the people I know in the Free Britney movement, they're not lawyers. These are just normal people that Britney Spears, when I was talking about that impact that the Smiths and Joy Division, those bands had, Britney's had that same kind of impact for them. And so they just felt like, this is not right. We want to do something to correct this. And the dedication they've had to changing the course of her life has been amazing. And to me, what is just so, like, uplifting about it, it shows what people power can do when they really have a very focused and just, if you kind of removing their ego from it, but a very focused agenda that we're going to get this done. And they've really kind of created blueprint that people can use for other things. And that's what I really hope happens after this, is that other people, there's other things like a woman's right to her body, so things like that, or think, well, you know, something else I'm really passionate about, obviously the ocean or rescue dogs, whatever it is you're passionate about, you can use some of these tools that the Free Britney campaign has done so successfully and use it to change the law or other causes that are so crucial. Mm. That's what I think is great. In terms of Britney herself, you can really see a difference just on her Instagram. And I mean, she's been silenced. I mean, that's the whole thing, Georgina. This woman has been silenced for 13 years. And it's just shocking. And that to me is the biggest terror of it. This is one of the biggest icons of the last 50 years that's been completely been not given a voice, her voice taken away. What about all the other normal people out there that are not Britney Spears? What about all the other women out there that are not pop icons and loved by millions around the world? To me, that's the scariest part about this case.
Absolutely, absolutely. Have you met her?
I met her a long time ago, and I feel really bad because this is back in my, like, you know, I'm punk rock days. And we went to see a show with her, and all I remember is that I was really perturbed because she was singing. It was like we saw her on a big screen before we went back to say hello. And there was singing going on, but she wasn't singing, if you know what I mean. Like you could see on the big screen that her mouth wasn't moving, but there was music coming out. And I was really like, But I've not met her around this. It's like to get to Britney has been impossible for this.
Do you know if she's read your book?
Nobody has read the book. The only people I know that because we just got the books, actually, the only people that I've known that have read the book so far are you ready for this random list? Henry Rollins, love him. And Cozy Fanny Tootie from Throbbing Gristle, because I sent them the manuscript. I sent them because I'm like, what do you think of this? And they both, like, Henry Rollins is like, America hates women. And Cozy was just like, I know nothing about Britney. I'll give it a read. And then she's like, oh, my God. Like, she really liked it, too, which I was really kind of to have two of my idols love the book. I was just like, oh, my God. And it's weird because I would say this book is definitely for Britney fans, but it's also not for Britney fans. It's for pop culture fans and for fans of just sociological anything, because that's really what it's about. You know, each chapter, yes, uses Britney as a springboard, but uses Britney as a springboard to look at something else.
Mm. Well, now, Monocle listeners can read it, too, because it is out. It's called Being Britney, Pieces of a Modern Icon, and it's by Jennifer Otter Bickerdike.
Yeah, you got. See, you're even better than my grandma.
Thank you so much, Jennifer, for coming in. And thank you to you all for listening. This is Monocle Reads. Thanks also to our producer, Nora Hull, and our researcher, Sophie Monaghan-Coons. I'm Georgina Godwin.